TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Professor Richard Wolff on May Day 2025. On the impact of President Trump's first 100 days. This is the replay of a special live May Day talk by Professor Richard Wolff on President Trump's economic policies. Wolff had been invited by Women Building Up in Brooklyn, New York. In spite of this serious topic, his presentation was also entertaining and full of surprises. Richard Wolff is a professor emeritus of economics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst and a visiting professor in the graduate program in international affairs at the New School. You are now joining the live talk on the impact of President Trump's first 100 days in the section on tariffs.
What is this? The tariff. He's going to tax all of us. If we had a lot more time, I'd ask you to raise your hand. Did you have a cup of coffee this morning? Coffee is an import. We don't grow that here. I mean, Hawaii a little bit. You understand? We long ago lost our manufacturing. All of that left. It went somewhere else. One of the places it went, China. And why did that happen? Because it was profitable to capitalists to move. The Chinese didn't make us go there. They had no way to do that. What the Chinese did, and what many other countries did, is say to American corporations, come here, you can pay workers a lot less here than you're paying in Cincinnati. In every business school in America, and I've taught at them, you teach young people who want to go into business, you want to be successful, go where the wages are low and the market is growing. And that place is called China or many other countries. So American corporations, to make more money, did that. That isn't the bad government. The government in this country didn't do anything. It got out of the way. We call that neoliberal globalization. Sounds better. And American corporations went to where the profits are, because that's the way capitalism works. The Chinese made a demand. They said, okay, you can come here. You can hire our workers. You can make a ton of money. And you can sell your product all over China, which is one of the great growing markets in the world right now. Just a little footnote. General Motors sells more cars in China than it does in the United States. The best electric car in the world right now is made in China. Most of you never heard of it. It's made by the BYD Corporation. Did you ever hear of that? I can tell from your faces, most of you didn't. There was a competition over the last 10, 15 years to build electric cars. You know all about that, to replace the gas-burning cars. That competition was won by a Chinese company. How did the United States handle that? By excluding it. Mr. Trump started with a 27.5% tariff, and Mr. Biden raised it to 100%. So if you want to get a $30,000 electric car or truck from China, here's how you do it. You send $30,000 to China, they send you the truck. But if you want to pick it up at the dock, you got to pay 100% again, another $30,000 to Uncle Sam, making the final cost to you $60,000, which you all, as Americans, say, no thank you, too expensive. Who does that protect? General Motors, Ford, and Tesla. Because they are producing their cars somewhere other than China. Wow. You're the victim here over and over again. But that's just the beginning. I'm now going to tell you things that ought to scare you. This is an act, an aggressive economic damage done by Mr. Trump to every country on earth. every one of them now realizes that their market in the United States is in trouble. Americans are going to have to pay a tax to Uncle Sam to get the French wine or the Belgian chocolate or the computer part or the Apple phones, all made in China. Your morning latte, if this goes through, will set you back $25. How often are you going to go then? Starbucks is in a complete tizzy. Their business is disappearing. Nobody can afford it anymore. We are becoming a country that looks like those we used to watch on National Geographic programs on TV. A few rich people in a few elegant cities surrounded by a vast sea of poverty. That's where we're going, folks. It is so obvious now that for people like me, I have to stop at a certain point, as I will this evening, because I don't want you all to get depressed. From your faces, I can see I've already reached that with some of you. I'll try to bring it back. On the other hand, why am I telling you this? Because the rest of the world doesn't sit there and say, oh, we have to accept it. Maybe the American people will, but nobody else. 2 days ago, there was an election in our country to the north, Canada. A party that was far behind in the polls won. Why? Because their leader said, this is a vote against Donald Trump. If you hate him, vote for me. They do, and they did. And he's now the leader of Canada. Uh-oh. Canada is one of our largest trading partners. Canadians who normally come south, because it's warmer here in the summertime, aren't coming. Bookings for tourism are off the chart. Ditto the Europeans. They're not coming either. That's not good for New York City. Not at all. This is one of the first places they want to see. They're not coming here. They're very angry because their companies have said, we can't sell our stuff in the United States because since the tariff raises the price for Americans of what we ship, they're not buying the way they used to. They'll all learn to drink wine from California. I'm French. Wine matters, you know, one of those things. They're all retaliating. Look at the Chinese. They retaliate. As soon as Mr. Trump raises a tariff, they follow. A couple days later, not quite as high. They always want to make it very clear, we wouldn't do this, but if America does it, we're going to do it. And you know what the rest of the world is feeling? Bitter, angry. The United States is trying to solve its economic problems that I've just laid out for you at the expense of the rest of the world. And guess what? They don't like it. And those companies there are demanding that their government do something. And what do they want them to do? Retaliate. Hit the United States with tariffs. Make it harder for Americans to sell stuff in those countries because their people have to pay their government for a tariff. The Europeans are about to impose tariffs. Virtually every other country is. And that means I have to tell you something which you already know, but I have to bring it home to you now, and I have limited time. We are living, you, me, right now, through a very huge change in the entire world economy. There's many ways to explain it, but I'm going to summarize it this way. For most of the period since the end of the Second World War, so roughly since 1945, the United States was the one super powerful, rich, capitalist country. All the others that might have been competitors, Britain, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, wrecked by the war. They came out of the war where all the bombs fell, where all the troops were killed, where everything was smashed. Other than Pearl Harbor, at the very beginning, no bombs fell in the United States. No factories were destroyed, no railway lines were destroyed, and we suffered many fewer casualties as a percentage of our people than any of those other countries did. Better. Our economy was a disaster in the 1930s, the Great Depression, and it was the war that brought us out. So our economy was stronger at the end of that war than it had been. Whereas everybody else, the opposite, weaker than they had been. So we were king of the hill. The dollar became the global currency, could use it everywhere. Of course. The United States is 4.5% of the population of the world. We have 330 million people. It's about 4.5% of the population of the world. But we accounted in those years, the 50s, 60s, 70s, and all that, we accounted for a third or 40% or 50% of the total output of the world. Europe rebuilt itself, for those of you who know the history, because we lent them the money with which they could then buy the products we were ready to sell them. That was the period of the rising American empire. The previous empire, you all kind of know, the so-called British Empire, collapsed. India, remember, Mahatma Gandhi becomes independent. That was the great jewel of the crown of England, India. So they break away under Gandhi, 1947. It's the end for the British. It's the end for the French. All of those empires gone. Who replaces them economically? The United States. Nobody else can. And we made a fortune of money, and the American economy took off, and we lived in a country that persuaded itself that it wasn't these peculiar circumstances of the war. And no. Built into America is the exceptional quality. We work so hard, and we save our money. And there again, we encounter that economic concept, bull. And how do we know? Because it's gone. It's never coming back. And that's very hard for all of you. Whether you admit it to yourself, whether you're even conscious of yourself yet. I'm working hard to make you conscious of it. It's over. The American empire is in decline. And that shouldn't surprise anyone, because every other empire in the history of the human race has gone up and then it has come down. Why, you would imagine this one would be the one great exception, you have to be even crazier than most of us are. It was never a question of whether, it was only a question of when, and when has arrived. Here are the clues. We lost the war in Vietnam, we lost the war in Afghanistan, we lost the war in Iraq, and we're in the process of losing it in Ukraine. Hint! What is that about? These are not just wars the United States lost, but let's be clear. The United States, one of the richest countries in the world, went to war in countries that are among the poorest in the world and were defeated. Oh my good, that's like the British arriving here in 1776 with their fancy equipment, and those colonial fellows with their muskets defeated them. Very hard on the British. Very hard on us. We have a new world economy. We're not the top dog anymore. It's not that we're losing that position. We lost it. It's gone. Let me give you, because I'm an economist, some statistics, very brief, to chew on. The United States is part of a group of nations that are allied. Well, these days I have to qualify that. Were allied. They're called the G7. It's the United States, Canada, Japan, Britain, France, Italy, and Germany. That used to be the powerhouse center of the world in the second half of the 20th century. If you add up the total output of goods and services of the G7, the United States and its major allies, it amounts to about 28% of the total output of our planet. Now I'm going to mention another group, the People's Republic of China and their allies, who have a name. It's called the BRICS, B-R-I-C-S. That was originally five countries: Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. And another 20 or so, or 18, have joined. That's another bloc. What is the total output of goods and services of the bloc of China and its allies, the BRICS? Answer: 35% of world output. That's already a much bigger economic unit than the United States and its major allies. It's over. We are not the center of the world economy the way we were. Every country in the world is rethinking its strategy. Political, economic, military, ideological. Every company in the world that has any international business is trying to figure out, what does this mean? When African countries these days are trying to figure out, where do we get the money to build the railroads that we need? They used to go to New York or London or Paris. They still go to New York, London, and Paris. But as soon as that trip is over, they go to New Delhi, Beijing, and Sao Paulo. And they ask each of them, who's giving me the better deal? And they go with the better deal, which is why most of the railroads in Africa today are built by the Chinese. Why most of the ports emerging on the coasts of Latin America are Chinese. It's not just your underpants. It's everywhere. And there is no end of that in sight. The United States doesn't know what to do. It has no coherent policy. The tariffs? You must be kidding. The tariffs against China. We are going to contain China. The older ones of you might remember, that's what was said about the Soviet Union after World War II. George Kennan came up with the plan, we're going to contain them. We're going to put military bases all around them, which we did. We're going to build alliances around them, NATO, which we did. And we're going to bring them to their knees, which we did. We did. So the same policy is being pursued with regard to China. It's even called a Cold War or a new Cold War against China. This is the worst mistake imaginable, economically speaking. Why? Because the relationship between the United States and China is completely different from the relationship between the United States and the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union was never an economic competitor of the United States. It never came close to anything remotely like that. China is completely different. Why? Because they are an economic competitor. That's why your toaster underneath says made in China. They make everything. We make nothing. Almost. I'm exaggerating, but you get the idea. Our businesses went there. So did the Japanese. So did the Europeans. They all went for the same reason. Profit. It's how capitalism works. We're left with the results of how capitalism works. And by the way, the companies that went to China, they did make a big profit. That was a smart move that they did for their profits. That movement began to get really big in the 1970s and 80s. And the stock market performance in this country, for those of you who've paid attention, has been really good in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and even to the present. If you were a participant in the stock market, you got a share of the extra profits that came. But if you weren't, you didn't. The richest 10% of Americans own 80 to 85% of all the shares. You're not part of that group unless you're a very unusual person. And in that case, please give me a loan after the club. You understand? The United States is facing the first serious economic competitor in this country's last century. No wonder we're living in a different world. If you want to understand why the Chinese are going to be the country to deal with in all of your remaining lifetimes, that's why. They're the model. They grew further, faster than anybody has. They overcame poverty for a very large part of their population. They have an economy different from the United States. For those of you who are not familiar, let me mention it briefly as I try to wind this down. They don't have a dominant position for private enterprise, owned and operated by an individual or a group of individuals or a group of shareholders, what we're used to in the United States. What do they have? Do they have an economy in which the government owns and operates all the enterprises? Absolutely not. The Soviet Union went in that direction. They had the government take over. That is not what the Chinese did. What did the Chinese do? They made a decision around 1960s, when, for some of you may remember, they, having been the protege of the Soviet Union, entered into fighting with the Soviet Union, disagreeing with them, and even having military clashes between Russian soldiers and Chinese soldiers. They took a different direction. The Chinese economy today is a hybrid. About half of its enterprises are privately owned and operated by Chinese people, by Americans, by Europeans, Japanese, and it's open. The other half is owned and operated by the government. So they're not the American model, but they're not the Soviet model either. They're something different. And what they have is a powerful government that coordinates these two different parts. And the basic rule is we, the government, run by a political party, the Chinese Communist Party, this is what we want to have develop in China. If the private sector can make profit by doing some of this, good, go do it. But if you don't make it, if you don't do it, we, the government, will do it. We don't give a damn about the profit. We give a damn about making this society evolve in a certain way. If you go to China today and you move around the country, you will almost certainly do it by rail. It will blow your mind. You have no idea what a railroad can be until you go there. I mean, there's some other countries do this also, but the Chinese are way ahead. Rapid, beautiful, wonderfully appointed trains. We don't have that at all. Can't we build trains? Of course we can. Do we have the technical knowledge? Of course we do. We built a lot of railroads in the history of this country. It's not profitable, so we don't have it. It's not profitable there either, but they do have it. Why? Because the government did it. This is a whole different way of thinking about what an economy is there for. I mean, either the economy is there to serve us, the people, or we, the people, are there to serve the economy. You want to think about that. Most of you don't. Those of you that are students or remember what it was like in student time, remember how you thought a little bit. What's the right course for me to take? What's the right major for me to select? Where are the job? Where do I fit in? That's you fitting into an economy. You know, the idea is the other way. The economy should fit you. If you're miserable and bored in your job, the problem is your job. But a successful system might survive for a while if it convinces you, if it can, that the bad fit between the economy and you is your fault and your problem. And so now go and get high to forget about it all. Come on. Somewhere you do know. All right, let's bring it down to the next step. The next step has to do with getting all of this done. How do you pass a tariff that's going to make the United States what it now is? I read European newspapers every day. It's part of my job. The United States is now called, in a growing number of quite conventional newspapers in Europe, it is referred to as, quote unquote, a rogue state. A rogue, you're the bad guy. I'm an American. We are the bad guys. We're shaking everything up. We're making everybody else pay for our economic difficulties, which we got ourselves into. They're not happy with this at all. Our alliances are very weak because of it. It's not just that Mr. Trump wants to put a tariff on Mexico or a tariff on Canada or a tariff on Europe, all of which he's trying to do. It's the outrage that people who feel they've been close allies are now being treated really shabbily. And I don't think that's at all a misunderstanding. I think where it takes us is one of the points I want to leave you with. Mr. Trump's regime is a regime best understood as a regime of desperation. This is a society having a very hard time facing that the empire is over, that it has real competition. I want to remind you, every major high-tech firm we have in Silicon Valley has its equal in China. We don't stand out relative to them at all, despite the fact that they have four times the population we do. The BRICS, China and its allies, is over half the population of this planet. The United States is 4.5% of this planet. Think about it. Which side are you on is going to become an important question in your life.
You heard excerpts from a live, in-person, May Day 2025 talk by Professor Richard Wolff at Women Building Up in Brooklyn, New York. Richard Wolff is a professor emeritus of economics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst and a visiting professor in the graduate program in international affairs of the New School. I urge you to look up the full-length 70-minute video that is the source for this radio program. It's easy to find on YouTube. The title is Global Capitalism on This May Day, posted on May 8, 2025. Again, look for the title, Global Capitalism on This May Day. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Glodden. Thank you for listening.